Welcome to Tetragon Financial Group Q2 2011 conference call. Handing over to one of the principals, David Wyshnaw.
Thank you, Ada. As one of the principals and the investment manager of Tetragon Financial Group, I'd like to welcome you all to our investor call. This call will focus on Q2 2011 results and provide an update on business progress to date. The format of today's call will be similar to prior calls. Phil Bland, our CFO, will present Tetragon's Q2 results. I'll provide a quick overview on our portfolio and key performance metrics, and Mike Rosenberg will provide market color, and then we'll all address questions we've received in the Q&A portion of the call. I'd like to remind everyone that the following contains forward-looking comments, including statements regarding intentions, beliefs, our current market expectations concerning performance and financial condition on the products and markets in which Tetragon invests. Our performance may change materially as a result of various possible events or factors. Let me now turn the call over to Phil.
Thanks so much, David, and welcome to our second quarter 2011 investor call. As usual, I'd like to start by providing some high-level comments on TFG's results for the quarter, and these, of course, are contained in the recently published performance report, which includes the financial statements for the first half of the year in unaudited format. TFG delivered a strong second-quarter performance, which is the eighth successive quarter of positive earnings. EPS were 74 cents per share, which is equivalent to consolidated net income of $88.1 million, whilst cash generation from the CLO portfolio grew quarter on quarter by around 13% to $102.4 million, and consolidated NAV per share, net of all fees, increased to $11.52. Looking at the statement of operations, in general, the key drivers of performance were a continuation of the positive trends witnessed over the previous few quarters, namely that the CLOs benefited from strengthening OC cushions supported by reduced underlying losses, wider spreads on reinvested collateral, increased carrying prices on defaulted and triple C assets, and indeed a reduction in triple C assets. As a result, IRRs moved up on a portfolio basis, weighted average-wise, to 16.3% from 15.8%, and that's taking us close to pre-crisis level IRR levels. Interest income from investments of $52 million plus unrealized gains on investments of $65 million yielded a total investment return number of $117 million, which is in addition to the cash flow I mentioned earlier. Whilst this was lower than the previous quarter, it's worth reflecting that this is still one of Tetragon's strongest quarters to date, and that both forward-looking input assumptions and the discount rate buckets applied to cash flows were unchanged, and I'll cover a little bit more on those later in the call. To recap, and as described in more detail on pages 10 to 12 of the Q2 report, the methodology for driving our US GAAP compliant fair value of the CLO portfolio involves two main steps. Firstly, we project future cash flows and calculate the IRR on each deal using an independent market standard modeling tool which contains the current status of each deal and to which certain future assumptions are applied. With regards to this first modeling step, our key forward assumptions, which include defaults, recoveries, prepayments, and reinvestment prices, were unchanged versus those used at the end of 2010 and indeed at the end of Q1. While we continue to outperform those metrics on a portfolio basis, as David will discuss in more detail later on the call, the macro environment remains uncertain and certainly challenging, and accordingly, positive recent performance is not reflected in more optimistic future modeling assumptions. In step two of our fair value process, we adjust the future cash flows resulting from step one, using a discount rate which we believe reflects an appropriate risk premium, which would be used by other market participants. Again, the concept of US GAAP compliance. You'll recall that in Q1, in the light of, among other things, a reduction in observable risk premia being applied to CLOs, The discount rates applied to our pre-crisis CLO portfolio were reduced to 20% for the stronger deals and 25% for the remainder of the portfolio, giving a weighted average of roughly 21%. We believe that these levels were at the conservative end of a reasonable range. During Q2, observable spreads on more senior tranches dropped for a while before ending the period very slightly wider, but the Q1 discount rates are being maintained at the same levels, which we still believe is an appropriate one. With a continuation of deals strengthening in Q2, reflected in higher actual OC ratios compared to expected OC ratios, 6 transactions migrated into the stronger category, so had the lower discount rate of 20% applied to them. And this resulted in a fair value increase of approximately $8.4 million. With approximately 86% by value of the deals now in the stronger category, the weighted average discount rate fell slightly, but it's still in the order of approximately 21% on a weighted average basis. Generally speaking, if the discount rate is higher than a deal's IRR, the fair value of that deal will be below its amortized cost and vice versa. The difference between the total amortized cost and the fair value, and we calculate this on a deal-by-deal basis, is what we've described as the ALR fair value adjustment, or ALR for short, which we've explained in some detail on a number of prior calls. In another strong quarter, fair values and IRRs generally increased closer to the weighted average discount rate, and thus the ALR reduced on a portfolio basis by approximately $22 million, from $155.7 million to $133.8 million. The addition of investments in LCM 8 and LCM 9 has brought over $50 million of post-crisis vintage deals over the last few quarters, which David will comment on further later. These deals are being valued using the same basic two-stage modeling methodology I described a short while ago, but using the IRRs as the relevant discount rates, given their different risk profile from the pre-crisis transactions. Thus, the amortized cost for these deals reflects fair value. To conclude on this section on CLO valuation, I just want to touch on the final part of our valuation process, which is to check the resulting values against observable market prices to the extent that they're available. As I've emphasized on previous calls, the fair value of TFG's own CLO deals cover a pretty broad span, and this reflects the range of individual deals' performance levels. And of course, market data for our paper, unfortunately, continues to be somewhat patchy. That being said, our average carrying cost across the US CLOs, which account for over 86% of the portfolio by fair value, was approximately 76 cents at the end of Q2. This is up from around 75 cents at the end of Q1 and from 67 cents at the end of 2010. Observable data gives a mixed view of the second quarter, but there is certainly a consistent message that the first half of the year was very positive for US CLOs in particular. We continue to believe that whereas at the height of the financial crisis, our modeled fair values were on average materially higher than certain observable averages, post-crisis, we may be viewed to be at the conservative end of a reasonable valuation range on average. And of course, we continue to monitor market data in the context of validating our fair values. Turning now to other aspects of the operating performance of TFG, operating expenses, including performance fees and taxes on LCM results, totaled $35.3 million in the quarter, and that represented around 29% of total income and gains. So that's a small increase on the 27% we saw in Q1, and that's partly as a result of higher professional fees. Turning now to cash flows, and we receive a number of regular questions from investors regarding cash flows, historical and future. In Q2, the cash generated by the portfolio continued to improve, and this reflects, amongst other things, the strong underlying portfolio performance. Total cash receipts from the portfolio were approximately $102.4 million, which equates to around 86 cents per weighted average share. and this is a continuation of the recent pattern of increasing cash flow generation. Whilst cash receipts will certainly not be even quarter on quarter, we currently expect that in the absence of any dramatic market or macroeconomic disruptions, our cash flows from the portfolio in the second half of the year will be similar to those received over the last 6 months. Turning to our asset management businesses, a quick comment on LCM. LCM's top line income edged higher in the quarter to $3.9 million and is currently expected to grow again in Q3 as the fee income from LCM9, our new CLO issue from June 2011, comes online. On the back of the strong quarter's result, TFG announced a dividend of 10 cents per share for Q2, up from 9 cents in Q1. The board continues to believe that the dividend is a very important consideration for investors and accepts that, and it's also an important tool to return value to investors. Also recognizing that it sits alongside a number of other tools, such as the share buyback program, and using cash to further TFG's investments and building its asset management capability. In summary, we're pleased with the financial results for the quarter and indeed for the first half of the year. The drivers of performance have continued to center on strong earnings from strengthening deals and growth in cash generation from the portfolio and from LCM against the backdrop of improving credit fundamentals, albeit mixed with macro uncertainty. And with that, I'll pass back to David to comment on the portfolio and the risk profile.
Thanks, Phil. Let me now quickly run you through a few portfolio and performance metrics. With the recent addition of LCM9, TFG has new investments of $32.7 million for the second quarter. With this new investment, the CLO portfolio increased to 75 transactions. The number of external CLO managers declined from 28 to 27 as manager consolidation in the CLO space continues. As of the end of Q2, the fair value of TFG's CLO investment portfolio was approximately $1.15 billion. Up from approximately $1.1 billion as of the end of Q1. On a look-through basis, this represents exposure to leverage loans through our CLO investments of approximately $18.4 billion par value spread over 1,700 different corporate obligors, the substantial majority of which are U.S. names, with the balance being European names. Additionally, as of quarter end, TFG's direct holdings of bank loans decreased to an aggregate par amount of approximately $98.4 million and total fair value of approximately $96.7 million, down from $103.2 million as of the end of the prior quarter. The reduction in fair value was primarily the result of principal paydowns, and the portfolio is comprised of approximately 40 different issuers. The direct unlevered loan portfolio continued to perform well, with no defaults or downgrades experienced. From inception through the end of Q2, the direct loan portfolio has generated approximately $1.7 million of net realized gains. In addition, the portfolio has earned $5.7 million of interest income and discount premium over the same time period. We expect to continue to selectively deploy capital into direct loans when appropriate and leverage the expertise of the LCM team in this regard when possible. With respect to the CLO and loan portfolio composition, approximately 72.5% of risk capital is invested in U.S. broadly syndicated loans, 12.8% in European loans, and 15% in U.S. middle market loans. We continue to hold hedges against our Euro FX principal risk on a rolling basis and presently have no direct credit hedges on the portfolio. We also hold certain inflation protection hedges designed to provide portfolio protection if we should face such an environment. I'd like to now update you on some key performance metrics that we continue to remain focused on. In regards to defaults, TFG's lagging 12-month corporate loan default rate continued to decrease, falling from 1.1% annualized at the end of Q1 to 0.8% annualized during the second quarter. This outperforms the 12-month lagging institutional U.S. loan default rate of 0.9% as reported by S&P. At the end of Q2, 98% of TFG's CLO investments were passing their most junior OC test when evaluated on a percentage of fair value basis. When measured on a percentage of transaction basis, 64 deals, or 96% of the company's CLO investments, were passing their most junior OC test, an increase from 95% at the end of Q1. The increase in the percentage and number of transactions passing these junior most OC tests is the result of LCM9, which we closed at the end of Q2. TFG's U.S. CLOs, representing 87% of fair value through Q2, continue to perform very well, with 100% by both fair value and number of transactions passing their most junior OC tests. In comparison, the market-wide average of U.S. CLOs estimated to be passing these tests at quarter end was approximately 94%. At the end of Q2, the weighted average percentage of corporate obligors rated triple C or below fell to 7.2% from 7.8% at the end of Q1. In comparison, the Q2 market-wide median triple C asset holdings of U.S. CLOs were estimated to be 7.5%. Also of note, TFG's WARF, or weighted average rating factor, is slightly lower at 2,642 versus 2,664 at the end of Q1. With that, let me turn it over to Mike to provide some color on the present loan market and CLO conditions, and then we'll move into the Q&A section of the call.
Thanks, Dave. The CLO market remained strong through the second quarter of 2011, as evidenced by a continued low default environment and consistent primary deal flow, albeit at lower levels than what we witnessed during the 2005 through 2007 time period. Generally speaking, corporate balance sheets remain in good position, benefiting from several things: deleveraging, restructuring programs, and strong EBITDA growth, all of which, in our view, mitigate near-term default risk. Despite the current benign default environment, there remains a significant macroeconomic and geopolitical risk whose effect on the loan market is unclear. The European sovereign debt situation may lead to some increased volatility in loan prices. Depending on the breadth and depth of the situation, European banks and other European investors may become more risk-averse, resulting in less demand for leveraged bank loans, both in the U.S. and in Europe. Now, having said this, this situation has been ongoing for some time now, and the effect of which on the loan market has not been significant to date. In the U.S., the potential downgrade of the U.S. below its current AAA rating would add continued uncertainty for the loan market. We believe that the short and medium-term default risk in the loan market would depend on the overall economic impact of a downgrade, including the potential for a more sluggish GDP growth forecast going forward. However, generally speaking, a low economic growth environment is not necessarily bad for the loan market and can be positive in some circumstances. This type of environment may keep loan spreads at attractive levels, keep underwriting standards in check, and potentially dampen the cyclical nature of underwriting standards in the loan market. The downside scenario would be the risk of a shock to the U.S. economy, whereby corporate issuers have trouble accessing the capital markets for the financing needs and thus creating a liquidity crunch, or if a downgrade to the U.S. resulted in a significant slowdown in GDP, leading to a recession. With respect to new primary deal flow, most of the major investment banks are staffing up their CLO desks, either with new hires or reallocating existing resources. We've seen a steady supply of new issue deals through conversations with investment banks or directly with some of our existing CLO managers. We are currently evaluating several third-party manager transactions, as we believe the arbitrage looks attractive and may prove to be a good use of our capital. Additionally, we will continue to explore opportunities to grow LCM, which may include another CLO at some point in the second half of 2011. Now I'd like to move to the Q&A section of the call. We have been asked questions regarding the scheduled end of the reinvestment period for each of our deals, which we publish each quarter, and the ability for our CLO managers to reinvest proceeds post the reinvestment period to take advantage of the low cost of financing for the majority of our deals. Although each deal may have different terms, generally speaking, post the end of the reinvestment period, a manager has the flexibility to reinvest unscheduled pay downs, principal proceeds, and certain sale proceeds into new loan investments, subject to various restrictions and clauses in the CLO documentation, as long as a restricted trading condition, which is a defined term, does not exist. A restricted trading condition is generally triggered when the debt tranches of a CLO are downgraded below a certain threshold. The vast majority of all deals in the market have experienced downgrades to its debt. However, given the benign credit environment and the performance of CLOs, both rating agencies, S&P and Moody's, have been active in upgrading the debt tranches in many transactions, which would result in the restricted trading condition being no longer triggered. Accordingly, there may be the potential for a certain level of further loan investment post-reinvestment periods, which could accrue to our investment's benefit. In addition, recently Moody's has announced a change to their ratings methodology and expects the vast majority of their deals to be upgraded using the new methodology. Following the publication of the revised methodology, Moody's placed on review for possible upgrades 4,220 tranches, then rated AA1 or below, which represents 80% of all outstanding cash flow CLOs. If and when these upgrades happen, each of our managers, all other things being equal, may have more flexibility to reinvest post the reinvestment period. Now, given that we do not model the ability for managers to extend our transactions because of this flexibility, we would expect this to be beneficial to the current returns in our portfolio. We received some questions about Green Oak. In terms of an update on Green Oak, we are pleased that they continue to build their team and execute on their business growth strategy. They recently had their first closing for their U.S. investment program, launched a Japanese investment program, and have continued with their advisory work. TFG has recently funded a relatively small portion of its capital commitments to the U.S. fund in Q2 2011, and more recently an acquisition of a Japanese asset in July 2011. We expect Green Oak to continue to look for attractive real estate investments around the world, and we will report on future developments. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Dave for a few other questions we received.
We received a few questions in regards to our share buyback program. The current program remains active and runs till October 2011, at which point we would expect to renew the buyback program. To date, we've purchased approximately 13.3 million shares at an average purchase price of $4.82 per share. This represents a total consideration of over $64 million afforded to shareholders through effective share reduction. Under the present program, we have approximately 3.3 million shares permitted to be purchased. Such purchases at appropriate levels below NAV represent an attractive use of TFG's excess cash and an efficient means to return cash to shareholders. We further believe that the share buyback program may be helpful to promote liquidity in TFG shares as well. Along those lines, we received a question as to whether we would consider a U.S. listing for the company. We do not currently expect to publicly list the company shares on another exchange. As you're all aware, TFG shares are publicly traded solely on Euronext Amsterdam. By way of background, at the time of the company's initial public offering and in consultation with the company's underwriters and its legal and financial advisors, we concluded and continue to believe that after analyzing various listing alternatives within the U.S. and Europe, that Euronext Amsterdam is favorably suited to facilitate the company's investment objectives and various relevant legal, regulatory, liquidity, and other commercial considerations. To give you a bit more background, at the time of our IPO, we looked into various structures that could possibly facilitate a U.S. listing, such as a BDC or a REIT. Each had significant downsides, in our view, for the business that we sought to build. We believe we made the right decision in structuring and listing the company the way we did. We do, however, continue to examine ways to improve liquidity for TFG shares through, for example, improved analyst and brokerage coverage, investor communication, and non-deal roadshows as well. We also continue to participate in investor conferences in the U.S. and Europe and elsewhere, and plan to expand this in the second half. We believe these efforts have yielded positive results, with the average daily trading volume for TFG shares increasing from prior years, especially when compared to 2008 levels. We received some questions in regard to the ongoing litigation. Regarding this, the recently filed derivative action in the United States District Court, Southern District of New York. The ongoing legal proceedings, unfortunately, limit our ability to comment on the matter. That being said, as we have stated previously, TFG and its board of directors believe that this action is factually and legally without merit and intend to seek to have the action dismissed as quickly as possible. That brings an end to our call and the Q&A portion as well. We'd like to thank everyone for joining. As always, please do not hesitate to contact us with any further questions. We look forward to speaking to you in the future. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes today's conference, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.